The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, we all want to shield our children from life's darker moments, but what do you do if something happens to the person who is protecting those children? Freelance journalist Niamh O'Reilly is with me now to talk about her personal experience going back a year ago in June and the steps that she has taken to cope with the possible, although hopefully unlikely, recurrence of that drama. Niamh, good morning and welcome.
Morning, how are you?
You might bring us back to June of 2024.
Yes, so it started out like a normal day. It was one of the last weeks of school, so I was trying to get my then 4 and 7-year-old ready to leave the house. The usual, where's your shoes, brush your teeth, all of that. And I started getting some pain where my ovary was, and I recognised what the pain was because...
Was this a chronic condition that you've been living with?
This was a chronic condition. I had wound up in A&E the year previous with these pains, not knowing what they were, and found out that it was an ovarian cyst that had ruptured. So when I had these very bad pains, I realised it was most likely another ovarian cyst, something that I've been dealing with on and off.
Now, people will talk about pain and, you know, 1 to 10 and trying to grade pain in that way.
Yeah.
I mean, you can describe physically what it did to you.
Yes.
Because that may be a better way to understand how bad it was.
Absolutely. So, I mean, as I said, the pains came on me and I thought, OK, I'll probably gut this out. It'll be fine. If I can just get the children into the car and drop them to school, I can get home, take a couple of painkillers and just let it pass. Because in my experience, I knew that it would pass. I knew it'd be very painful, but it would go and I would be all right. But as the morning went on, I got the kids in the car, everything was fine. And then I went back into the house to get the keys so I could lock up. And I realised I couldn't stand up. I was walking at sort of a 90 degree angle because the pain in my side was so bad. And then when I went back into the hall, something changed. And it was like an explosion in my side. And I'm sure people will be aware of that feeling of knowing you're going to pass out. And I knew I was going to faint. But I didn't want to faint in the hall because the children were already in the car. And I knew that the car we had, if you don't get in and start it, it would lock itself.
It would lock itself with the kids inside.
It would lock itself with the kids inside. So I was in the hall knowing I was going to faint. A million crazy scenarios going through my head. What if I fainted and hit my head and was out longer than a few minutes and the car locked and the children were in the car and all of this sort of thing. So I managed to sort of...
Would it have been likely... that someone might have passed by, a neighbour? I mean, do you have neighbours that would be going up and down? Or
yeah, not really. Like, we have a very early start in the morning and we don't have a whole lot of neighbours. We do live in an estate, but I think someone would have had to been walking right past the drive.
So you had this vision of the two kids locked in the car for hours.
Yes, of
screaming,
course.
Crying,
anything
upset.
Could have happened, yeah. So I was freaking out. And you know when you're going to pass out, you start to get quite dizzy and you feel most unwell. Anyway, I shimmied out to the car and I just wanted to get in the car so that they weren't by themselves. So managed to flop into the front seat. I think I grabbed onto the steering wheel. I looked at my kids and I said something like, "Mummy doesn't feel very well." And then I blacked out.
How long, or can you estimate how long you were out for?
It's hard to know. I tried to ask my kids, but, you know, they're only 4 and 7 at the time. A few minutes, definitely. And when I came to... I was very confused. I didn't know where I was. I didn't know why I was in the car. I had a ringing in my ears. I was breathing very heavy. I still had pain. I didn't know where I was. I started messing with the air vent and trying to just orientate myself. And
was the pain still there, or had it subsided?
The pain was still there, but the huge, massive pain that caused me to pass out had gone. And I turned to my side and I saw my 7-year-old sitting in the front seat, staring at me with just these wide eyes, not saying a word. No, they weren't crying, they weren't screaming, but they were just staring at me, very white, very shocked. And I think at first they thought I was messing. They thought I was asleep or pretending to be asleep or something like that. And they were very shocked. Yeah.
So what did you do next?
I very stupidly drove them to school. I shouldn't have, but I was confused. I was shocked myself. And I drove the car. Everything was fine. I got them to school. I couldn't walk them into school myself because I couldn't stand up out of the car. So I had to phone my mum, who was my saviour, and she came and collected me and she brought me to A&E.
And what could they do for you in A&E? I mean, this is a pre-existing condition.
Yeah,
you knew what it was.
I did, but I had never experienced a rupture so bad that I would pass out and pain so severe. So ovarian cysts are quite common, but when they rupture, they can be quite serious. There is something that can happen called ovarian torsion, where your ovary can twist and it can cut off the blood supply. You can have bleeding. So it is very important that you get it checked out. So I spent the day in A&E and I was sent off to Holles Street, which was kind of a strange experience being there and not being pregnant. And I had to stay the night and have investigations and then had a follow up later with a consultant.
Now, have they resolved that problem or is this something you have to live with?
No, like a lot of women with very painful, often debilitating conditions of your reproductive system, it's ongoing. It's something I still deal with. And it is a possibility that I could have a reoccurrence so bad that I could pass out. So it's always in the back of my mind.
Now, the question is what your kids could have done in a medical emergency. I mean, as it happened, they were in the car going to school. Yeah. It could have happened in your kitchen. It could have happened in your... They're watching telly in another room or playing games or whatever and mummy collapses on the floor.
Absolutely. And that's the scary thing. And I think it's something, as parents, we don't really want to think about, you know, because your children see you as this infallible person that nothing can happen to. And you will also probably think that until something like this happens. And I think it's a conversation we don't have with our children. So I hadn't talked to them about what do you do if mummy takes ill or granny takes ill.
By the way, when you got your head together and they came home from school, what did you tell them about what happened?
Oh, God.
To
well, you see, it was almost worse in their minds because I had to stay the night in hospital. So I didn't come home until the next day. So it made it all seem a little bit more scary, I think, for them. A lot of questions from them. And I just answered them as honestly as I could. And a lot of repeat questions. And my 5-year-old in particular, he still brings it up from time to time, even a year later. And it's often when we're in the car and nothing is happening. We're just chatting away normally, driving along in the car. And he'll just randomly go, "Mommy, remember that time you fainted in the car?" And I'm like, "Yes, I remember." So it's something I think that, you know, they're still processing and they're still, you know, they're working it out in their little minds, I think, still.
And the older child?
So he was 7 at the time. He's now 8. He kind of, I think, approached it differently. He's a very sort of sensible kid. He's a very old head on young shoulders. And I think in his mind, he was not exactly guilty, but I think he wanted to know what to do in that situation. Okay. And I think he was disappointed he didn't know what he should have done.
Now, thinking of this condition, how suddenly did that acute ovarian cyst episode happen? I mean, did you have any warning that there might be something about to happen?
No, like I just thought this was a regular cyst that I would get probably, you know, very, very frequently, almost every month, according to your cycle, and a very strong pain, but a pain you can just get on with.
So there was nothing to tell you this is going
to
be worse?
No, I didn't know it was going to rupture and cause me to pass out until it happened.
Okay, so we are going to talk about how you then prepared your kids for any future such eventuality. But in terms of your own protocols, I mean, have you decided how you will behave any time you have a cyst?
Well, yeah, I think I'd just be honest with them and sort of let them know that, you know,
Mummy
has a bit of pain in her tummy again. And I told them what it was. And, you know, I need to sit down. But also, I don't want to worry them. So I'd be very upfront and say, you know, I'm absolutely fine. I'm going to take a couple of paracetamol. I don't think anything is going to happen here. But I think having them in the loop is probably a good idea. So they wouldn't be taken by surprise if
matter how shocking the episode was, the first one, when it's explained.
When it's explained, and kids are very much like that. Once you explain things to them, they're generally pretty satisfied with things.
Okay, one of the things immediately that springs to mind, if you, I mean, obviously a 7-year-old might be able to do this, but a 4-year-old, unlikely, find mummy's phone, open mummy's phone, ring 911 and give your address or your air code.
I know, yeah. And I don't think my 4-year-old would have been able to do that. But I think now that they're 5 and 8, they definitely could. And what we've done is we've written the air code at home on the notice board in the kitchen. So it's there because anyone can forget their air code from time to time. So it's good to have it written down. It's very, very useful information. And also my 8-year-old is a dab hand now, I have to say. He's opening my phone at will, you know, for various things. So he's quite comfortable with that. He knows our address actually off by heart. And also, you don't need to unlock a phone to dial 999. Yeah. So, you know, even a small child might be able to do that, you know, without having to unlock the phone. But also just letting them know to stay calm. I think that's really important because, you know, it's very easy to get panicked in a situation like that when your caregiver suddenly has a medical emergency. And I think for all of us, staying calm in an emergency is very important. And I think
So you now have introduced those protocols for your
absolutely.
Boys.
And I would talk about it often with them, you know. And also the thing is that struck me after this happened to me, a lot of grandparents are looking after, you know, young children. I think it's almost 30% of grandparents in Ireland who are over the age of 70.
So maybe unsteady on the feet.
Well, you never, like, over. As you know, in your 70s, there might be propensity for medical issues or falls or something like that. So I think it's very prudent that if a grandparent is looking after a grandchild, you might just have the conversation, you know, with them both. And a good tip I got was, if your child is very small, use play as a way to kind of get this information across to them, because kids learn so much through play and role play. And if they're up for it, I would say do something like that and just introduce the concepts gently to them.
So the idea being that one of them would act out the part of granny getting sick. And
granny has fallen. You know, what should we do? What would granny need? And stuff like that. And generally, little kids love those sorts of little role playing. But again, you know, as a parent, you don't want to scare children either. So I would say always just try and meet your child where they're at. I think developmentally is a good one, and be led by them.
So what would your kids be capable of doing now?
I think
following your...
Yeah, I think they'd be very capable of phoning either, you know, my mum or my dad or their daddy. Or if, you know, things got really bad, they could phone 999. I think they'd also be confident if something happened at home to go next door and knock on a neighbour's door, you know, if they couldn't raise anybody. They would be able to read out the air code. So I think they're quite well prepped.
Now, what have the psychologists been telling you about any lasting PTSD on the kids having watched Mummy?
I know. I was very concerned. Like, I don't think they're traumatised by it, but I think certainly they were very shocked by it. But I think in talking to kind of, you know, child experts, the way my children, I think, behaved afterwards is very normal. So in terms of asking questions sort of repeatedly and maybe over a period of time and sort of randomly is very normal, because it's them working it out in their mind, and asking kind of the same questions is a way for them to kind of resolve it.
One of the things, of course, and we mentioned it earlier, is do kids know their own address?
Yeah.
Because, you know, maybe they use maps to get home, maybe they don't. Also, the telephone number. They just go into a phone and they get Mummy or Joe or John or whatever. They haven't a clue what the actual digits are.
No, they don't. And I suppose mine wouldn't either, because all the contacts are saved under people's names.
So therefore, maybe it's a good idea to get them to learn a number off by heart in case they have to talk to a stranger.
Absolutely. And I think, again, if you have a notice board in your home, most people have a whiteboard or a chalkboard or something, you know, in their kitchen, write these things down there, you know, this very important information in case they have to refer to it, definitely.
Now, some of the texts coming in: shouldn't all kids know their address and their mum's number and full name, but also be aware of stranger danger? Don't go to...
That's true. That is true.
Teaching them to call granny or 999 is helpful. A four-year-old can go to a neighbour, maybe. Something similar happened to me, and one of my kids was very traumatised, wouldn't sleep alone for a month or so after the event. And another one: for those who might not know, the doors could have been opened from the inside. The kids would have set off the alarm if the car were to auto-lock, as there are motion sensors inside.
But that would have been good. I suppose I didn't have a lot of time to think about that. I just thought the kids are in the car, must get to them. Yeah. So, but that's
an interesting experiment with your particular model of car.
Yes.
allow it to lock with yourself inside. And then
see, surely it would set off the alarm.
What happens,
yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Kids need to know what to do in an emergency, and adults. Your guest admits she didn't know herself what to do. Normalise ringing 999. You don't need blood pouring out to require an ambulance. They will likely send first aid responders who will assess you and help, so you're not being overdramatic. Never think that. Just call an ambulance. Do not struggle on.
I know, it's easier said than done, isn't it?
Easier said than done. Yeah. Anyway, I think very educational. Niamh, I hope you don't have a recurrence of your dramatic adventure, and I hope you get the condition ultimately sorted out to your satisfaction. Niamh O'Reilly, who's a freelance journalist, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.